Welcome to Sojourner Truth. Thank you for staying with us. This is your host, Margaret Prescott. Today, we speak with sex worker organizations based in the global South and North about their movement for decriminalization, to be recognized as workers, their struggle within the feminist and other movements, and their struggle against poverty and other violence. Why are sex workers concerned about the push by some sectors of feminism to prioritize trafficking, often put together as sex trafficking? What is the problem? Why are the impacts of laws against sex workers on the most vulnerable populations, in particular women of color, immigrant women, and trans women? How are the murders of indigenous and black women being used by the trafficking lobby to make their case, while at the same time they ignore or do nothing about the serial murders of black women in South Los Angeles? Today, we spend the hour unraveling controversies around sex workers. Our guests are Thailand-based Liz Hilton with Empower Foundation, a large network of sex workers based in Southeast Asia; Nikki Adams of the English Collective of Prostitutes; and Rachel West of U.S. Prostitutes Collective. We live in a global world. We're all interrelated. So on Sojourner Truth, we work to bring directly to you news and views on local, national, and international policies and stories that affect us all. And we draw out how those of us most impacted, women, communities of color, and other communities, are responding. We also discuss the interrelationship between art and politics. Now for our news headlines.
For Pacifica Radio, I'm Eileen Alfandari. The suspect in a series of bombing attacks that terrorized Austin, Texas over the past few weeks blew himself up early this morning as law enforcement closed in on him. Authorities warned of concern that more explosives might still be at large. Austin Police Chief Brian Manley said authorities had zeroed in on the suspect in the last 24 to 36 hours and located his vehicle at a hotel in the suburb of Round Rock near Austin.
As members of the Austin Police Department SWAT team approached the vehicle, the suspect detonated a bomb inside the vehicle, knocking one of our SWAT officers back, and one of our SWAT officers fired at the suspect as well. The suspect is deceased and has significant injuries from a blast that occurred from detonating a bomb inside his vehicle.
Authorities identified the suspect only as a 24-year-old white man. A federal official said it was hard to say if the suspect had acted alone. Austin has been targeted by four package bombings since March 2nd that killed two people and seriously wounded four others. A fifth parcel bomb detonated at a FedEx distribution center near San Antonio early yesterday. The Senate rejected a resolution that would end U.S. military support for the Saudi-led war on Yemen. The Senate voted 55-44 to table a resolution that would have directed the removal of U.S. military forces from hostilities in Yemen that have not been authorized by Congress. The resolution was authored by Vermont Independent Bernie Sanders and Utah Republican Mike Lee. Sanders said the U.S. provides weapons to Saudi Arabia, refuels its warplanes, and helps select targets in a war effort not authorized by Congress.
What we are saying is if Congress wants to go to war in Yemen or any place else, vote to go to war. That is your constitutional responsibility. Stop abdicating that responsibility to a president, whether it is a Republican president or in the past Democratic presidents.
U.S. military involvement in Yemen began under President Obama. In the end, five Republicans voted for the measure. 10 Democrats voted against it, including New Jersey Senator Robert Menendez, the ranking Democrat on the Senate Foreign Relations Committee. He argued against the resolution on procedural grounds, saying the proper channel would be for his committee to debate the issue. But he also defended U.S. involvement in the conflict.
In considering Senate Resolution 54, I encourage my colleagues to assess the best way to promote core U.S. security interests in the Middle East, including pushing back on Iran's aggressive and destabilizing actions across the region. We must fully grasp the situation on the ground and the scope of attacks on one of our traditional security partners. Saudi Arabia has endured Yemeni-originated attacks inside its territory on a scale that no American would accept.
The three-year-old Saudi war on Yemen has devastated the country, leading to the world's worst cholera epidemic and exacerbated malnutrition among children. UNICEF says in Yemen, 22 million people and nearly all its children are in desperate need of humanitarian assistance. Officials say an Islamic State suicide bomber struck on the road to a Shiite shrine in Afghanistan's capital, killing at least 29 people as Afghans celebrated the Persian New Year. The public health ministry said another 52 were wounded in the attack, which was carried out by a bomber on foot. Nigeria's government says 101 of the 110 schoolgirls abducted a month ago by Boko Haram are confirmed freed, and it indicated the release is not over. Witnesses in Dapchi town say Boko Haram extremists released the girls in the middle of town before dawn with a warning to parents to never put their daughters in school again. The release came a day after an Amnesty International report accused the Nigerian military of failing to heed warnings that the attack was coming. Senators are expected to press Homeland Security Secretary Kirstjen Nielsen on the department's efforts to secure state election systems as the Senate Intelligence Committee launches an effort to safeguard this year's elections against hacking. Committee Chair Richard Burr and Ranking Democrat Mark Warner released their recommendations ahead of the hearing. Burr said the federal efforts to protect state and local elections from Russian cyber attacks haven't gone far enough.
The federal government should partner with the states to truly secure their systems. DHS offers a suite of cybersecurity assistance, but we've heard that they do not have the resources to fulfill all the requests. We will work with appropriators and authorizers to see if, in fact, we can't fill that gap.
Burr added that all votes should have an auditable paper trail. I'm Eileen Alfandari. You're listening to Sojourner Truth on Pacifica Radio.
Those were our news headlines. And today we'll be spending the hour discussing sex worker organizations based in the Global South and North. Sex worker advocates and their supporters say that criminalization sets sex workers up as easier prey for serial murders and other violent men. And moralism within some sectors of the feminist movement have caused them to equate prostitution with sex slavery and make the claim that rather than being workers, women who work in the sex industry are simply victims of sex trafficking and what they refer to as the sex trade. Sex workers say not so fast. They have pressed for their rights and are making headway in New Zealand and other countries. New Zealand has decriminalized sex work, and they press Amnesty International and other major organizations, including the Lancet Medical Journal, to support decriminalization. The Women's March in the United States after sex workers protested included sex worker speakers at their march in Las Vegas and elsewhere in the United States. And the International Women's Strike in the U.S. and globally have a position in support of sex workers. Let us go now to a clip on sex workers who met in Europe speaking out about fighting for their rights.
Like many of us in Latin America, we want to escape from poverty. From a lot of us, it's almost like a goal. It's like a dream to migrate, to escape from that poverty, also from transphobic violence, because we also have our other continent that had the biggest ratings of transsexual murders in the whole world.
The state has been committing human rights violations against sex workers who are from Syria. And the same thing goes on with other migrant sex workers. A lot of migrant sex workers, either Syrians or others, are being deported on false allegations. There have been a lot of cases, for example, of Turkmen sex workers, who are sex workers from Turkmenistan in Central Asia, who got deported to their own countries, and we heard stories that they were killed in honor crimes.
There are also in the same area last month raped also supposedly in the name of trafficking. But yet again, no victims or charges for trafficking have been brought. But 26 people have been arrested for immigration offences and some detained and deported.
The municipal governments, like in Madrid, in Barcelona, in Valencia, in Bilbao, about 10 years ago or so, they implemented municipal ordinances to try to block almost, basically street-based sex work. And the great solution that they have found, finding their clients. So in some occasions, they find also the sex workers. If the sex worker finds a way to be legal, the residence permits are denied because of this record of being fined and the fines haven't been paid.
So what do we want? We want decriminalization of the sex industry. We oppose criminalization of clients, so hands off our clients. And just one last thing, before a new legislation or a new law is brought, can you ask us, we are here today, and listen to us and ask us, what do we want?
All righty, and the source of that clip, the International Committee on the Rights of Sex Workers in Europe. So let us introduce our roundtable here first. I'd like to welcome Liz Hilton. She has worked with the Empower Foundation for over 36 years. Ms. Hilton's expertise includes research, filmmaking, and publications, including Hit and Run, the impact of anti-trafficking law and practice on sex workers' human rights in Thailand. Ms. Hilton is an English speaker and fluent in Thai. She has been central to bringing Empower's advocacy, campaigning, art, and performance to international audiences. In 2015, she testified in the UK Parliament as part of an international symposium on the decriminalization of sex work organized by the English Collective of Prostitutes. She is on tour now, along with three other sex workers from Thailand. They have been invited to speak at Brown University and at several other areas. Liz Hilton, welcome.
Thank you, Margaret. It's lovely to be here.
I'd also like to welcome Nikki Adams of the English Collective of Prostitutes, a UK-based group founded in 1975, which helps sex workers defend themselves against unjust charges and spearheads campaigns for decriminalization, safety, and for resources so that sex workers can leave sex work if and when they want. Nikki Adams, welcome.
Hello, Margaret. Glad to be here.
And I'd like to welcome Rachel West of the U.S. Prostitutes Collective, a Bay Area, San Francisco area-based organization founded in 1982, which won parity for sex workers in compensation claims and policies establishing immunity from arrest for sex workers reporting violence. I'd like to add that U.S. Prostitutes Collective grew out of a collective of black sex workers in New York, referred to as NYP, as New York Prostitutes Collective, and when the organization went national, the name was changed to the U.S. Prostitutes Collective. Rachel West, welcome.
Thanks, Margaret. Good to be on.
Okay, so you heard, all of you heard the sex workers speaking out at the International Committee on the Rights of Sex Workers. And Liz, let me first start with you. First of all, tell us a bit about Empower and about the work that you all are involved in.
Yeah, Margaret, so Empower is a Thai sex worker organization that came together in 1985, so it's about 32 years ago, to begin to try to improve the lives and opportunities of sex workers in Thailand. And it became very clear to sex workers themselves and other people working with Empower that one of the things that needed to happen was the police must be taken out of the lives of sex workers. If we're now connected to over 250 similar organizations in 77 countries around the world, and sex workers in all those countries are unanimous in saying that two biggest problems people are facing in their work is the police and the stigma. And that stigma includes what you were talking about earlier, is coming from this mutant feminism that tries to speak over the top of women who are doing sex work, whether they are trafficked or not, whether they're in good conditions or bad. Empower, so what we do is a collective of sex workers who are looking together at what policies may work, trying to lobby to the authorities for reform, and on the ground helping each other through many different situations, including situations of very exploitative working conditions, situations of migration. And over the last few years, a lot of our work and sex workers' work together is to help women and help each other after they have been rescued and forcibly detained and deported by organizations claiming to act in the good interest, in their own good interest. So the anti-trafficking movement is having a dreadful impact on the lives of women in sex work, both those who are committed to being sex workers and those who want to leave sex work.
Right, and we'll be getting more into the trafficking controversy in just a moment. But Nikki Adams, turning to you, and then following you will be Rachel West from U.S. Prostitutes Collective. Tell us a little bit about what gains the sex worker movement has made, as far as you know, particularly in Europe, but New Zealand and other places. And Rachel West, if you could tell us about some of the gains in the San Francisco Bay Area in California. Nikki, let's start with you.
Well, I think the biggest gain for the sex worker movement has been establishing in the public mind that sex workers are workers like other workers and that we're women like other women. So I think that for us in the UK, that has been a massive shift. But I think internationally it's been also been a shift where more sex workers have braved the stigma and felt able to be public, and that our demand for criminalization has gained much more public support. The one country in the world that has actually decriminalized sex work is New Zealand, and that law was won by a coalition led by the sex worker collective based there, the New Zealand Prostitutes Collective. It brought together a very wide range of organizations, and the motivation for the law was to improve the safety and health and welfare of sex workers. And it's been thoroughly reviewed by a government body that included representatives from different sectors of society, and they found that sex workers were much more empowered to insist on their rights. It didn't solve every single problem of society. You can't say that violence has disappeared completely, but what the big difference is that sex workers are stronger to be able to insist on their rights. And over 90% of sex workers in New Zealand say that since the law was introduced, they feel more able to insist on their employment, their labor, their economic, their civil and human rights. And that's a massive win for the sex worker movement internationally.
Right. And Nikki, what about some of the major NGOs? I mean, Amnesty International and some others. Have any of these NGOs, I mentioned Amnesty earlier, International. Was I right about that? Are there any
Yes.
other major NGOs who have now taken a position in support of decriminalization and for the rights of sex workers?
Yes. I mean, starting with Amnesty International, they really have responded and supported the sex worker-led movement for decriminalization. They did a very thorough piece of research that looked at the situation of sex workers in a number of different countries in the global south and north, and they concluded that, first of all, that sex workers were capable of having their rights violated. That in itself was actually big progress, because previous to that, many of the feminist and other, some of the other international NGOs would only look at sex workers as victims, not as workers and not as human beings whose rights could be violated. So that was, we're very appreciative of what Amnesty International did. But for us in Europe, the other extremely important piece of work that Amnesty did is that they looked at the situation in one of the Nordic countries, Norway, where the legislation has been changed to criminalize clients and supposedly decriminalize sex workers. And what they found was that stigma and discrimination, and in many cases violence against certain sectors of sex workers, had increased. That the claim that that legislation decriminalized sex workers was absolutely not true, that migrant women in particular were being targeted under the laws that still existed and criminalized under those laws. And that was very important and helpful for us, because we are constantly facing a push in the UK and in other European countries to criminalize clients, following the model that had been introduced in Norway and Sweden. So Amnesty International is one very important ally, but there's also the Global Alliance Against Trafficking in Women. There's the Lancet that you mentioned, the BMA, there's UNAIDS. There's a whole set of international bodies who have actually responded and supported the sex worker-led movement for decriminalization and have now come onto our side and are part of that struggle to change the law to get the criminalization off our backs.
Well, Nikki, I imagine some of our listeners may be asking this question. Why shouldn't clients be criminalized? I mean, people say, well, the women are criminalized, so why shouldn't the men be criminalized? What's your response to that?
Well, that's not the kind of equality that any of us want. We want a higher standard for everyone rather than for clients to be criminalized alongside sex workers. But the biggest reason that we're opposed to the criminalization of clients is that it makes it more dangerous and stigmatizing for sex workers to work. If clients are criminalized, it pushes prostitution underground. It's harder for sex workers to insist on their rights. It's harder to screen clients. It's harder to work in a safe way. And as the situation in Norway and Sweden have shown, waves of sex workers continue to be criminalized under the law, and the increase in stigma means that we get discriminated against in every other sector of society. So social workers will come and take our kids on the grounds that we have not faced the reality that we're actually a victim. So if we don't accept their judgment of us and agree that we are victims, then we're seen to be deluded and not capable of caring for our children or functioning as a member of society. And that's a very massive danger, and it's had a terrible, terrible impact in those countries where clients have been criminalized. And we're really standing against that in the UK. There was a very important court case that was being brought on a European level to challenge the law that had been brought in Northern Ireland. That court case has currently stopped because the main sex worker who was bringing that case sadly died. But we're looking at other ways to challenge the impact of the criminalization of clients on sex workers.
Right. Thank you for that. Nikki Adams of That Voice was Nikki Adams, the English Collective of Prostitutes. Now, Rachel West from U.S. Prostitutes Collective. It's interesting the point Nikki made about sex workers having their children taken from them, because research in the United States has shown that when welfare is cut for single mothers, the number of mothers, single mothers arrested for prostitution actually increases. Right. And you see an increase of criminalization of women and single mothers, one of the largest growing population of people going to prison. The majority is still men, but women are the largest. I mean, the majority of those not having to do with sex work, a lot of them have to do with the criminalization of drugs and crimes of poverty and crimes of survival. But Rachel West, tell us about some of the progress that you feel the U.S. Prostitutes Collective and other sex worker groups in California, in the San Francisco Bay Area, have made, and about some of the legislation being introduced in other parts of the country. Rachel West.
Well, in the San Francisco Bay Area, you probably know there's a long tradition of sex workers organizing. I mean, there's been support actually from the city of San Francisco, the Board of Supervisors, back in the end of the 90s. When there was a task force on prostitution that studied prostitution, and sex workers were involved, and we came out in support of decriminalization. And that had a big impact, because that was, the whole country was watching what that task force supported.
we've found that, and what we've been organizing around is chipping away and fighting for decriminalization, because you know what we found is that when women are criminalized, it makes sex workers more vulnerable to violence. And there has been a lot of violence, not because prostitution is violent. It's because of the criminalization, and violent men think they can, you know, attack sex workers and get away with it. And sex workers have been reluctant to report violence to the police because, you know, when you do, you can get arrested and you can get prosecuted, and the police start investigating you instead of the crimes against you. And we actually had a case of a young woman who came to us who had been brutally attacked and raped and had gone to the police and was very badly treated. And then she went to claim compensation for rape, like any victim in California, you know, supposed to be able to go to the compensation board and get compensation help to recover from rape and, you know, for safety, help with safety and other issues, and found out that, no, if you're a sex worker and you go to claim compensation, you weren't allowed to get it. There was actually a clause in the California program that said sex workers are not eligible for compensation. And, you know, we were shocked to find that such a regulation existed. It was the only one in the country. And together we decided to take this on and fight it and get rid of that regulation. And it was quite a struggle. It was over a year. We organized with lots of sex workers in the Bay Area. We went up to Sacramento, you know, to the hearings. They put on hearings about this particular regulation. And we got quite a lot of organizations involved, other organizations, not only sex worker organizations, across California, and had a, you know, very strong campaign.
Was the ACLU part of that effort, Rachel?
ACLU mm-hmm. was involved and, yeah, came with us to hearings. And, you know, we made a very strong case in the hearings. With, well, one hearing, 17 sex workers came and spoke out. And the bureaucrats, you know, in the compensation program had to sit and listen, you know, to our experience. And in the end, we had a meeting with the board. And the press was there, and it was a big moment, and the board voted to get rid of the regulation. So that was, you know, a tremendous success, and we got huge press at that moment, you know, from around the world, because it was, you know, a major step forward for sex workers to be able to claim compensation.
Did it only impact sex workers, Rachel? What about other people, for example, formerly incarcerated people? Because that's
right.
And young people, yes, who were in prison.
Mm. Yeah, we also found out in the course of our campaign, working with organizations that we have a relationship with of formerly incarcerated people, that if you have been on felony, you come out of prison, you're on felony probation or parole, and you get attacked or raped, you also weren't eligible for compensation. And even if you came off probation or parole, you were put at the bottom of the list. So forget it. If you were a formerly incarcerated person, not able to claim compensation either. And that, you know, was another area of discrimination that we wanted to fight. And we took up with organizations of ex-prisoners. And we pressed on that as well, including pressing for undocumented immigrants to be able to claim compensation, which they can do. And we won most of the discrimination against formerly incarcerated people was also removed. We got a bill that was in the California legislature that dealt with a lot of the, you know, complaints that we were making and grievances and discrimination in the program. We won with formerly incarcerated people. Okay. The other achievement that's happened quite recently, working with other groups in San Francisco.
Rachel West, before we go on to that, I'm looking at the clock and I'm afraid we are now going to have to take a short station break. So hold that thought. We are going to come back to you. We want to hear a bit, too, about what may be happening in other states and other places, other states where sex workers are also organizing. And then we do want to get into the whole controversy around trafficking, or what the trafficking lobby refers to as sex trafficking. So stay with us. We'll be right back. All righty. And Aretha Franklin's respect. And today's show, we are speaking with representatives of sex worker organizations who say what they want is some respect and not to be criminalized. This is Margaret Prescott, host of Sojourner Truth. If you've missed any part of this hour from 10 this morning for 90 days after that, just go to kpfk.org, scroll down to archives. You'll be able to hear the show in its entirety. And you can subscribe for a free podcast where you'll be able to hear the show anywhere in the city, nation, or indeed the world. And you could also check us out on our website at www.sotrueradio.org. And if you're a member of Facebook, you can like and friend us on Facebook. And we're also on SoundCloud. Just look for Sojourner Truth with Margaret Prescott. And today, we would like to give a shout out to our SoundCloud listeners. We're going to do two today. Our SoundCloud listeners in Thailand and our SoundCloud listeners in the UK. And we are having a discussion with Liz Hilton with Empower Foundation, a sex worker organization based in Thailand, but they're part of a network of organizations around the world, a large network around the world, with Nikki Adams of the English Collective of Prostitutes and Rachel West of U.S. Prostitutes Collective. And before we took our station break, we were hearing from Rachel West. She was talking a bit about some of the victories that sex workers have won. So, Rachel, I'd like you to finish up your point, and then I want to play a clip and get into the discussion on the controversies around trafficking. Rachel West.
I was just making a point about some policies that we've won in San Francisco, which is the first city in the country to get the police and the district attorney's office to agree not to arrest sex workers when they're reporting violence against them, and the district attorney not to prosecute. Now, it took us years to get it, us working with other organizations and city groups, pressing the police, you know, to come up with a written agreement that they wouldn't prosecute and arrest women if they report violence. So we've just recently won those policies, and we're very pleased about that. Also, just to quickly say, you know, sex workers around the country are organizing, and there's been bills introduced to decriminalize prostitution in Washington, D.C. right now. There's a bill in the city government, and in New Hampshire, there's been, for the last couple of years, there's been legislation to decriminalize prostitution, and also for a committee to study decriminalization. So it's definitely on the agenda in a big way, and the movement is coming up and growing.
Right, and as this movement is coming up and growing, the controversy around sex work as sex workers as workers, but also around the whole issue of trafficking, remains even today very controversial among some sectors of the feminist movement, including among some who have a reputation of being anti-capitalist and anti-imperialist, but when it comes to sex workers, refuse to say that they are sex workers and to say they're just merely victims of trafficking, and that refer to prostitution as the sex trade, and therefore if you're part of a trade, you cannot be a worker. So what I'd like to do, that controversy actually broke out in its most recent form in the organizing for the International Women's Strike in the United States. The International Women's Strike does, as I mentioned earlier, have a position in support of the rights of sex workers, and the global strike has a position that no sector of women workers should really be gone after, but they are deserving of support. and that is actually in the platform of the International Women's Strike. Nevertheless, and the sex workers spoke at the International Women's Strike event in New York. As I mentioned, they spoke at events of the Women's March as well after some protests by black trans sex workers and some others. In Los Angeles, there were no sex workers on the platform, and instead, this is the message from the platform of the International Women's Strike in Los Angeles from AFIRM, which are a group of women of color, largely Filipino women, but also other brown women for the most part, who say they are transnational feminists and that they're anti-capitalist and anti-imperialist. But listen to what they had to say on March 8th, 2018, on the issue of trafficking and prostitution.
We are here because East Asian women trafficked in massage parlors in Los Angeles today, and there is a legacy of this. It is a $2.5 billion industry in the United States, and one-third of the massage parlors are found in California alone. There is a history of this in the Comfort Woman that some of my AFIRM sisters are descendants of. Their lolas, their grandmothers, were forcibly taken from their homes during World War II and forced into sexual slavery. To this day, there have been no apologies, no reparations, no justice for the hundreds of thousands of Comfort Women. We are here because 20,000 Central Americans fleeing to the United States are forced into sexual slavery in Mexico. We are here because Los Angeles is the number one point of entry for human trafficking, and we are the highest and have the highest incidence of sexual exploitation of children. We are here because 70% of women in the United States sex trade are women of color. We are here because the Olympics will be in Los Angeles in 2028, and the sex slavery, sex trafficking, also known as prostitution, will rise significantly. We in AFIRM are not anti-sex worker. We are anti-sex trade. We are anti-sex trafficking. We are anti-sexual violence, and we are anti-sexual assault. We are against all forms of systems of sexual exploitation. We believe that women and children, that all people are not commodities. We ourselves are survivors of these forms of violence. We women of color are also the descendants of the Comfort Woman, the mail order brides, the enslaved, the trafficked, the survivors of genocide. We believe that there must be something that includes the experiences of transnational immigrant, migrant, women of color who do not see the torture inflicted upon them, nor the profiteering of their bodies as nonviolent, as labor, as, quote, agency.
Well, there you go. That was March 8th on the platform in Los Angeles. For full disclosure, I was actually on the platform, being one of the many large coalition of groups, grassroots organizations in Los Angeles that came together to put on the event, the International Women's Strike event, Los Angeles, on March the 8th. So I was on the platform that this statement was being given, and I did have to respond to it, as the planning group knew I would have to if this issue was raised, because it was the opposite position of what the International Women's Strike represented. But let's start with you, Liz Hilton. Just unpack a little bit. Let's start to unpack that what was said. Let's get a response from you for people who heard that statement and for people who heard it just now, who are thinking, well, what's wrong with that? Especially from an organization that people generally know as an organization standing for women's rights. Liz Hilton.
Yeah, well, we have never heard of this organization because it's a United States organization and we're in Asia. One of the things that really hit very hard, and I translated this piece to the other sex workers from Thailand traveling with me, was we didn't believe that they had a mandate or they had permission to use the experiences of the Comfort Women and of other women in order to make their point. We didn't understand why they were taking a platform, taking part in a platform that they didn't agree with, and why they would sabotage that, and why they had never contacted any sex workers that we've ever known of to find out what is the what are people's truths. I think, too, like the other surprising thing, we didn't know that sex work was an Olympic sport. No, so that was a little strange. There's always been so much propaganda and false statistics and made-up stories and myths and legends, including that great big sporting events increase prostitution or increase sex trafficking. So to me, it was just another... I don't know what to say. It was just another bag of fake facts and emotional propaganda that coming out on top of what sex workers are trying to say. And it's not that this kind of speech doesn't have an impact back where we are in Thailand. This kind of speech inflames the law enforcement and the abuses against women who are trafficked and women who are not trafficked in the sex industry. We have some vigilante groups from America who are calling men in America to bring their guns to Thailand to rescue adolescent girls and women. We're afraid that they're going to come and shoot us.
Liz Hilton, you know, just for you to comment on this, you know, a lot of our listeners know that I am from the Caribbean region, from Barbados in particular. But I do remember growing up when the U.S. sailors would come in on ships. And, you know, women, you know, from the village for surrounding areas may very well go into town, but, you know, get a new dress made by a local dressmaker and earn some money where the family would, you know, survive on for quite some time after that. Also, I remember my mother telling me stories of the local shopkeeper who often, you know, got quote-unquote sex favors or from women in the village. And for that, you could get food and other necessity items, you know, on credit. And coming from that kind of situation, you know, it can be very shocking to hear this kind of moral argument that what we have to do is we have to rescue these women if they're here in the United States and send them back to what? Send them back to poverty. And also being quite struck by the statement of sex slavery, sex trafficking, also known as prostitution. Liz, let's get a response from you before we hear from Nikki and Rachel on this.
Yeah, I think the terminology of sex slavery is it's not accurate, and it's so sensational and emotive. To get an emotional reaction, it doesn't describe any woman's situation in any useful way at all. And I've met women who have been in all kinds of situations over the last 26 years, and I've never heard a woman describe herself as a sex slave ever. It's something that other people call you. I think, of course, the same thing. We didn't understand. George Bush was the one that dropped trafficking on top of us in 2001. And then it was called human trafficking. And we were a little bit excited to be called human. But that soon changed, and now it's sex trafficking. But they don't talk about fish trafficking or tomato picking trafficking. It's only sex trafficking or trafficking for labor, as if it's just another way of being other and another way of not dealing with this issue of exploitation of labor in the sex industry, but dealing with it as a moral and ideological issue. And we know, too, like the actual responses are not coming from a point of care or concern about real women's lives, because we see how women are treated through the anti-trafficking processes. So we know it's a bigger agenda about borders, about economics, and about freedom of movement.
Right. And thank you for that. And that voice, Liz Hilton, based in Thailand. And just to be clear, I'm looking here at a definition of trafficking. Trafficking is forced or bonded labor, abduction, kidnapping, false imprisonment, rape, grievous bodily harm, extortion. Nikki Adams, aren't there laws on the books already that cover all of those crimes? Do we need additional laws? Your response to this discussion on trafficking.
There are existing laws to cover all of those crimes. That's absolutely right. And I think that, but I think trafficking has been a very useful tool for government to enforce border controls and increase deportations. And that's what we have seen in the UK, has been the impact of this sensationalized and often quite fundamentalist and crusading, judgmental campaign against trafficking. And the impact on us has been mass raids by the police against sex workers on the street and in premises. The most brutal raids are often the ones that are justified in the name of saving victims of rape and trafficking. And so that women are facing police in riot gear with dogs and are handcuffed on the floor, are taken out of premises in their underwear, they bring the media along. That has been the impact of anti-trafficking initiatives in the UK. And the most dangerous thing in some ways is that organisations like the one that you just cited, there are many organisations now in the UK that have signed up to this government initiative in every way, and they've got hundreds of thousands of pounds worth of funding in order to buy into this narrative of trafficking, which elevates trafficking over all the other forms of violence that sex workers face. And the impact has been to actually prevent us, forcing us more in underground, prevent us being able to report the violence that we do suffer. And migrant sex workers, of course, have been particularly targeted so that the raids may go, they may come in and raid a number of premises in a particular town, and they always start with the premises where migrant sex workers are working because they know they can justify those raids with the whole anti-trafficking narrative. And the figures that organization cited, based on our experience, we have been facing a complete fabrication of trafficking figures, so that in the UK they say that 80% of sex workers are trafficked, which is a complete fabrication. Less than 6% of migrant sex workers were found to be trafficked in the most reliable research that's been done. And I heard in your clip that they are calling for an end to sexual exploitation. Well, we want the end to all exploitation. And often for sex workers, going into prostitution has been the best way to resist exploitation in other forms of employment. The options for sex workers in the UK and internationally are very, very bad. You know, poor working conditions, low wages, not high enough wages for you to be able to support yourself and your family. The majority of sex workers in the UK are mothers working to support our families. And this anti-trafficking initiative has led to a crackdown on prostitution, which has done nothing to improve our working conditions or our situation generally. It's that it's increased police powers against us and increased deportations and raids.
Right. And Rachel West, first of all, I have to thank U.S. Prostitutes Collective, because the Black Coalition Fighting Back Serial Murders, when we began in the mid-1980s, bringing out the serial murders of Black women in South Los Angeles, some of those murders, we're told, have been solved. There's still a lot of women missing, and there are estimates of as many as 200 women, perhaps victims of serial murders. We might never know. And even Los Angeles Police Department figures are saying that between the mid-1980s to about 2007, there were somewhere, they don't even know for sure, but there's somewhere between 500 to 800 bodies of women that have been found in alleyways, et cetera. Not all of them victims of serial murders, but, you know, drug overdoses, et cetera. And it was U.S. Prostitutes Collective that really came and supported the Black Coalition and stood with us. And I'd like to have to say that some of these feminist organizations who go on about sex trafficking, not one of them came to us. Not one of them spoke up in support or did anything about the serial murders of Black women in South L.A., not to put us on their platform or anything else. And I just really have to say that, Rachel, before bringing you into this discussion, because we really do appreciate that work and support. But Rachel West, you weighing in on this situation.
Yeah, I mean, just as Nikki Ann was saying, I mean, what that anti-trafficking agenda and has meant in the U.S. is massive enforcement against sex workers. I mean, right now, there's a huge crackdown going on nationally against massage parlors, and I was shocked to hear firms say that you know, all the women in massage parlors have been trafficked. I mean, that's just not true. San Francisco is seen as the model city for this crackdown on massage parlors, and almost half the parlors have been closed down. And a woman managed to get the police reports and look at the cases of, you know, when the police went into the parlors and found out not one single victim of trafficking was found, yet they've closed down parlors, and so many women, particularly mothers, immigrant women, have lost their jobs. And there's all kinds of jobs that they do in parlors when they can't, you can't get a job anywhere else. It's had a drastic impact on sex workers and increased criminalization. And, who is targeted in these crackdowns is low-income communities of color. So it's like the anti-trafficking enforcement, just like the war on drugs. You know, who gets dragged, arrested and dragged into prison is people of color. And one last point I wanted to make was, I think it's been mentioned that the amount of money that goes into this anti-trafficking initiative is enormous. So, that's why they're making this case for trafficking, because of the 50 anti-trafficking organizations in the U.S., that they share $686 million a year. That's how much these anti-trafficking organizations are being paid. So they're making their case for trafficking because there's an enormous amount of money to be made. Each one of those organizations is pulling in about $13.7 million a year. So there's a lot of money to be made if you're, suddenly take up the issue of trafficking. You can get a lot of funding. The same is true for the police. Millions of dollars of federal money is going into law enforcement, to go after trafficking and find young people trafficked in prostitution. The Super Bowl, as has been mentioned, the sports arenas where they say there's hundreds of victims of trafficking, people have done research into that and have found that it's sex workers who are being arrested when they do these crackdowns in, Super Bowl and other kind of sports events, and adult sex workers. And then they may find some young people who are working for survival, working in prostitution to survive. And that's who ends up getting swept up. And, some customers of sex workers. It's a disaster, and it's having a terrible impact on our lives.
Right. And just thank you, Rachel West. And Liz Hilton, back to you, likely just having a final thought here from you. And Liz Hilton is with Empower, which is a huge network of sex workers in Thailand, but also part of a network of sex workers in a number of countries around the world. Liz, you have said and I'm looking at a document here, migrant women doing sex work, whether they're trafficked or not, are pitied, shamed, arrested, detained, vilified, and deported. Their lives are made worse from the help they receive, including the stigma created by anti-trafficking, anti-sex work campaigns. Liz, just a final thought, because the sister from a firm talked about the numbers of indigenous women, for example, who have been murdered. And Rachel West talked earlier about the vulnerability of sex workers because of criminalization to that kind of thing. So just a final thought from you, Liz Hilton, as you continue your tour here in the U.S., your speaking tour, Liz Hilton.
Yeah, I think that, of course, everybody is against trafficking. The problem is the solutions that are being offered are not working. They're failing and they're harming people. In last year in July, the Committee for the Convention of Elimination of Discrimination Against Women, CEDAW, they ruled for Thailand that Thailand needs to decriminalize women and to bring people into the labor law and stop raids and rescues immediately. So this was a historic breakthrough for the CEDAW committee, and we've seen that the police are starting to move a little. On March the 7th, Mbawa was awarded the best human rights, women human rights defender organization of Thailand by the National Human Rights Committee. So we can see these kind of things are evidence and proof that women who do sex work have rights. They have right to respect and to dignity. And the things that Empower is saying and that other sex worker organizations are saying, that raids and rescue and focus on trafficking is violating everybody's human rights, are true, because we can see that the mainstream, bigger organizations are finally listening and starting to follow sex workers.
Right.
So small organizations like a firm and other vigilante groups, we don't worry too much about them because the ears of power are already listening to us now.
Right. Well, I'm afraid on that note, we are going to have to end it there because we are out of time. And we would really hope that some of our well-meaning sisters who may be going down a path that people on this show have spoken out against will, you know, open up their minds and have some discussions and hopefully stand for the rights of sex workers and not really get used in any state operations. So we're going to have to continue this discussion. Nikki, thank you. Nikki Adams, thank you. Rachel West and Liz Hilton, thank you and very safe travels. We are out of time. Today's show produced by myself, Margaret Prescott. I'd like to thank the Sojourner Truth team, our intern, Sherelle Withers, our assistant producer, Stephanie Case, engineer, Mr. T. Teddy Robinson. If you'd like a copy of today's show, please contact the Pacifica Radio Archives at 1-800-735-0230 or go online to pacificaradioarchives.org. Sojourner Truth will be back on the air tomorrow. Thank you for listening.